and more times than I can count, I have called you mine. You have stood by me in my
life from New York City. It's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null on the road. Nice to have you with us today. Lot to share. A short piece from April Short today. You won't believe what the food industry is doing to keep Americans hooked on junk. We'll share that. Also, we're going to have Dr. Tony Bark on to do a newsmaker update on the assault on vitamin supplements again and the continuing attacks against alternative and natural medicine. Also today, we'll talk about glyphosate, that's Roundup, new information and it's not good, and an in-depth commentary for those who still believe that, okay, so they're spying on us if we're terrorists or if we're associated with some radical organization. Not true. They're spying on everyone. From the Washington blog, the monitoring of our phone calls, they are listening in on every single phone call, reading every single email. It goes much beyond what anyone has believed, and the documentation to support it. Today, I will share you the insights on Bono and his one campaign. I just saw it last night being mentioned again, and what it really represents, the very poor or the very rich, from George Monbiot. So we have a lot to go. Let's begin. First up, most people do not eat organic produce. They should. There's a high probability that they're going to be consuming glyphosate. That's also called Roundup. Here's the CRG, the latest report on this. An alarming new study finds that glyphosate, the active ingredient in Roundup weed killer, is estrogenic and drives breast cancer cell proliferation in the parts per trillion range. Does this help explain the massive mammary tumors that the only long-term animal feeding study on Roundup and GM corn ever performed recently found? An alarming new study, accepted and published in the journal Food and Chemical Toxicology, indicates that glyphosate, the world's most widely used herbicide, due to its widespread use in genetically engineered agriculture, is capable of driving estrogen receptor-mediated breast cancer cell proliferation within the infinitesimal parts per trillion concentration range. The study is titled Glyphosate Induces Human Breast Cancer Cell Growth via Estrogen Receptors. And I will post this so you can download the study yourself. Specifically, it induces T47D, hormone-dependent breast cancer cell growth. Then next, the proliferative effect of glyphosate is mediated with estrogen receptors. And it modulates the expression of estrogen receptor and estrogen receptor B and E in human breast tissue. So they said, where is the proof that the pesticide causes breast cancer? I just gave it to you. So for all those at the grassroots level who are trying to get referendum or laws passed to label genetically engineered foods, this is one more very important study that every legislator should have. Because then it becomes a matter of, does your legislator respect the rights of women to stay healthy and prevent breast cancer, or are women simply unfortunate collateral damage to their acquiescing to the wills of the lobbyists for ALEC and the American Legislative Exchange Council's 300 powerful corporations meeting with your state legislators and the money or the gifts that they get? So if they really cared about preventing breast cancer, then they would be banning Roundup, but in before that happens, at least they could demand that it be labeled. Now, when I travel around the world, I'm always looking for every possible country and its people that are living a long life, and then try to explore from their perspective, what do they believe is the cause of their longevity? There are several places where they're living very long lives. For a long time, in the 1940s through the, I'd say the mid-1990s, it was in Georgia. At that point, it was a part of Russia. And it had very high diet, rich in root, vegetables, grains, legumes, pulses, lots of exercise. The people on the island of Crete, as a small population, had the longest lifespan, and they adhered to the very high amounts of nuts and seeds and vegetables, lots of exercise, fish, and no stress. But as a large group, the largest group on the planet to live the longest lifespan have been the traditional Japanese versus the modern Japanese that is going to have a shorter lifespan. And of the traditional Japanese, no group has lived longer than those living on the island of Okinawa. In fact, just last week, the oldest person confirmed by records in the world, Kimura, was 116, and he died. But the second oldest person, who is now the oldest at 115, is Okawa, and he is from Osaka. And again, it's there you have the two oldest living people in the world, both following the Okinawan diet and lifestyle. It's more than a diet, it's a lifestyle. First, the idea of time in reality simply doesn't exist. They're not going to rush themselves and be stressed. Now, compare that to what we do. Compare virtually everything in our life every day is based upon an artificial time restraint. We're given so much time to eat lunch or peel out of the door with a quick breakfast or so much time to get our workout in, or we rush to get a noonday workout, or we wait till late at night. And I see this all the time on the Upper West Side where this our corporate headquarters is, and that's where our studios are up on 93rd and Broadway. And that's just at the heart of the Upper West Side. And within walking distance, there are at least seven major exercise clubs, like Crunch and New York Sports. And I've seen late at night people on those treadmills. And what's interesting, when I stand back at the street level and I look, I see that, you know, there's this hyper-determined, stoic face in these people. These are not exercising people because they're happy. It's because it's part of their discipline to get it in. So everything they can get in a day, they do, except probably happiness and joy. Highly stressed. I remember once sitting in the control room of a television production, because a friend of mine was the executive producer, and I'm listening to the screaming that is absolutely common and yelling going back and forth. You know, get this cue, get that camera. No one talking sensibly, as if just saying something thoughtfully and kindly with respect would also be heard. They seem to think that the only way anyone's going to obey them and make one camera come on and the other camera go off is if you yell at the person. That's common in the environment. Think of the people who are stressed to the max and yelling on movie production sets, because every hour that you're not filming, every hour that you're over, is costing someone. Now imagine a society that doesn't base anything on time, but rather the reality of mindful living in the moment. How would that change you? What would you do differently? Would you take your time when you're with your loved one or your companion pet? Would you give yourself time to really enjoy the environment you're in? So that is a very important part of why the Okinawans live a long life. In fact, most people are not aware of that, but Okinawa was called the land of immortals for a long time. It wasn't alone. There were native populations in New Zealand and even in the Arctic area with Sweden at one time. But also they're extremely physically active. They're very social. They have a perfect climate, and their temperament is very even. They have deep spiritual beliefs, and They have good upbringing. Now imagine the power of each one of those allowing you to get the right genetic message. The diet is important, but it shouldn't get all the credit. We know that they have a very low risk rate for arterial sclerosis and cancer, and they have very low risk of hormone-dependent cancers like breast and prostate cancer, almost non-existent. Now, they do eat 3 servings of fish a week on average, lots of whole grains, organic vegetables, and they have, get this, they eat the most soy products like tofu and tempeh than anyone else in the world. And by the way, when soy was being attacked about 6 years ago, in article after article, all coming from the Weston Price Foundation and its supporters, I just decided to do the simple thing that I thought made common sense. Rachel Spratt and 2 other researchers collected every study in the world literature on soy. If it had been paid for by the soy industry, it was excluded. So the only studies reviewed were independent studies. 99% were positive in its healing benefits. And only an extraordinarily rare situations where a person had a particular thyroid condition and couldn't have soy, or some rare condition. But for everyone else, over 4,800 studies in the peer-reviewed literature showed the healing benefit of soy. In any case, back to Okinawa, they consume more soy than per person than anywhere else in the world. But they also consume more seaweed than anywhere else in the world, especially what is called kombu. And they eat seaweed that is rich in the essential nutrients. They have very low cholesterol. They have very low blood pressure. They also have unusual vegetables, like they have a purple sweet potato. Now, purple sweet potatoes are very rich in lycopene and flavonoids. They also have what's called the bitter cucumber, or goya, and that's been shown to lower blood sugar in diabetics. So when you put it into the idea they're not eating all this salt or sugar or saturated fat, and they're not eating refined carbohydrates, and you put all that into one lifestyle, then you see why they're called the land of immortals. And they have more people per population over 100 years of age in good health than any other place in the world. So it teaches us something, and it's important. One more reason to say no to Monsanto and yes to your state efforts to get a law that will identify genetically engineered foods. And by the way, our article on genetically engineered foods and all the pro-GMO arguments that have been used, we have in there, and how to deconstruct each one. Also, from just one website, just one, over 300,000 people have watched the film. There are about 15 different websites showing it. We're guesstimating up around 4 million people have watched it now. We're hopeful the most ever watched was over 20 million watched The War on Health. So we're hopeful that people watch it and give it to people to inspire them to join the movements at the state levels. Here's one more piece of information you should have. Glyphosate, which is a major component of Roundup herbicide and manufactured by Monsanto, has been shown to impact the body in a negative way. Here's what we know it can do. It can trigger health problems like gastrointestinal disorders, diabetes, heart disease, obesity, Parkinson's, and Alzheimer's. And now there's new research of how it disrupts the P45 gene, creating enzymes that assist with the formation of molecules in cells, as well as breaking them down. And the CYP enzymes are abundant and have many important functions. They're responsible for detoxifying xenobiotics from the body. Well, when this is inhibited by glyphosate, then a critical pathway for normal natural functioning is blocked. And now we're looking at autism associated with it as well. Also, good news for those of you who have pre-diabetic positions. Probably 50 million Americans are pre-diabetic. If you look into Ayurvedic healing, and you should, it's a very long-established, incredible field, there is a journal called the Journal of Medicinal Food, and the newest edition talks about an Ayurvedic herb. It is called Salacia, S-A-L-A-C-I-A. And in the study, for 6 weeks, on a group of subjects, they used either placebo or lifestyle therapy or 500 milligrams of Salacia. And they found that it made a substantial difference in correcting the blood sugar level. So, one more thing that can help people. And also, infections increase risk of mood disorders. This is from University Aarhus University in Denmark. It says, new research shows that every third person who is diagnosed for the first time with a mood disorder has been admitted to hospital with an infection prior to the diagnosis. That's important. The study is the largest of its kind to date to show a clear correlation between infection levels and the risk of developing mood disorders. Now, anyone can suffer from an infection, for example, in their stomach or urinary tract or skin. It would now appear that their distress does not necessarily end once the infection has been treated. This new project shows that they're then susceptible to mood alteration. And finally, from the health area today, this comes from April Short of Alternet, and it's an article entitled, "You Won't Believe What the Food Industry is Doing to Keep Americans Hooked on Junk." Here's what she says. One, they're branding processed foods to look natural. Those grill marks on your burger, they're not real. They were put there by the factory, just like a pre-torn blue jean purchased at a brand name store. Junk food companies are branding their foods to have more natural, homemade appearances. And, well, for me, this kind of Orwellian, it's doublespeak, it's irony, that it requires more processing to make something look natural than if they just use natural. And rather than switch to ingredients that are actually healthier and less processed, food engineers at companies like Kraft and Wendy's and McDonald's and Domino's are responding to concerns surrounding overly processed foods with an unhealthy and deceiving facade of making their food look healthy. Kraft food engineers spent 2 years manufacturing a carving board line process that would create uneven turkey slabs. And Wendy's intentionally created curvier natural squares out of perfectly square beef cuts so the squares would appear less processed. And this is called, this is supposed to be something we're supposed to appreciate. Also, they're taking children to McDonald's under so-called philanthropic rationale. And then they're feeding the kids there while Ronald McDonald entertains them. And they're called Avro games. But their video games embedded in websites are doing that also. And then the bottom line is that children will go and eat a fast food meal thinking that it's good for them, and the parents think it's good that they're supporting some nonprofit charity part of that. No, it's all about getting them in to get them addicted on liking the fast foods. Very insidious is the idea of manufacturing addiction. So it's no coincidence that so many people are obese, despite all the knowledge we have of what's wrong with craving junk food. But junk food companies have got it down to a science. They are creating feel-good food that is manufactured to include just the right combination of sugar, fat, and salt our limbic brains love. There's an article called "The Jargon of Junk Food" by Paul McFrades, and breaks down the language of the junk food industry to show just how scientific and calculated the industry methods are for keeping people addicted. He has what's called the Pillar Ingredients, P P-I-L-L-A-R. The powder ingredients are salt, sugar, and fat. And the industry strategically combines the three to keep you hooked. And then they have the bliss point. If you crave powder ingredients so much, why not just crank them up as much as possible? It turns out there's an optimal amount of salt, sugar, or fat that the human brains like best, and it's called the bliss point. Then you have the mouthfeel. This is literally the way food feels inside a person's mouth. Junk food industry scientists also adjust factors like crunchiness to produce a mouthfeel that consumers most crave. Then you have what is called the flavor burst. Technologists alter the size and shape of salt crystals so that they induce a flavor burst that can basically assault the taste buds into submission. Interesting. There's an article called Food Engineers Now Making Your Burger Look Cool, Casual, and Real. Here's what Gawker reports. Quote, similarly, the Egg White Delight McMuffin at McDonald's is going for a squiggly circle rather than the disturbingly perfect round animal product disc that is characteristic of Egg McMuffin. Domino's Pizza churners are instructed to tweak the perfect rectangles on their artisan pieces to achieve a natural crudeness of homemade pies. Additionally, Gawker reports that Hillshire Brands Company, deceptively known as Hillshire Farms, is working to achieve the wholesome look after customers requested a grainier appearance on the company's poultry wafers. Their factory processes began to dye the edges of the meat slices with caramel food coloring. According to Gawker, Hillshire's vice president of marketing, Reggie Moore, said, quote, it's crucial to always be adapting their food chunks to fit changing standards of appearance. Yeah. As customers want more natural. Well, there's nothing natural in what they're doing. They're just trying to make it look natural. So, and then, of course, we have the vanishing caloric density. Underlying all junk food science is vanishing caloric density, which is the process by which the food melts in your mouth so quickly that the brain is fooled into thinking it is consuming fewer calories than it actually is. The packaged food scientists want to avoid triggering sensory-specific satiety, the brain mechanism that tells a person to stop eating when it's overwhelmed by flavors. Now, the goals are either passive overeating, which is the excessive eating of foods that are high in fat because the human body is slow to recognize the caloric content of rich foods, or auto-eating, that is, eating without thinking, without even being hungry. Now compare that to what I was mentioning earlier, where in, for example, the Okinawan family takes a long time to prepare their foods, and they eat it slowly also, in smaller portions. The Italians are the same way. So when you take your time to eat, you then create natural satiety. So when you've reached a level that the body is being told by the brain, you've had enough, it shuts off your appetite. But when you're eating fast foods and you're eating them quickly, then the brain is being tricked. Hence, you can pour a lot of calories into the body before you're even aware of it. I'm Gary Nall. We're here to talk about the issues that make a difference in our lives. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
If I could take you up in paradise up above, if you would tell me I'm the only one that you love, life could be a dream, sweetheart. Hello, hello again, shaboom, and hoping we'll meet again. Oh, life could be a dream, if only all my precious plans would come true.
If you would let me spend my whole life. I'm Gary Nall. And the music this week and next is for all of you who said, what about that music from the 50s? Well, that's what we're sharing with you. I'm sure that most people's impression of Bono, the singer, is that he's a great humanitarian who cares for the poor and the underprivileged. I remember a person with the United Nations coming to see me and saying that she knew Bono personally and that could I give her some of the films on AIDS, AIDS Inc. in particular, and some articles I'd written, and she'll get them to him to readjust his thinking on AIDS because he was the one leading the whole effort in Africa to get tested and get on medications early. He was the person leading that effort, as at one time Tom Hanks and Sharon Stone and Elton John did in the United States. And I certainly don't challenge them for their intent or the decency of their effort to want to help people. That's noble. But in each case, I sent them tremendous amount of literature and a list of physicians and a list of scientists, a list of Nobel Prize winners and their phone numbers that I had spoken with, saying, would you give some time to Elton John or Sharon Stone or Tom Hanks to let them know that they're being used, manipulated? And never heard from any of them. And about 6 months after I'd given about 100 videos, DVD documentaries of AIDS, Inc., person said Bono's not interested in anything that would challenge his position on this. That's fine. That's his right. Then I started seeing the word one, O-N-E, in capitals, bold. It's a whole new campaign. Here's what George Monbiot has to say about it. This will be posted on my website today. Who do Bono and One campaign really represent? The very poor or the very rich? This is really important that people know this, in my opinion. It was bad enough in 2005. Then the G8 summit in Scotland, Bono and Bob Geldof heap praise on Tony Blair and George Bush, who are still mired in the butchery that initiated in Iraq. At one point, Geldof appeared literally and figuratively to be sitting in Tony Blair's lap. African activists accuse him of drowning out a campaign for global justice with a campaign for charity. But this gets worse. As the UK chairs the G8 summit now, just ended by the way, a campaign that Bono founded, with which Geldof closely works, appears to be whitewashing the G8's policies in Africa. Last week, I drew attention to the new Alliance for Food Security and Nutrition, launched in the United States when it chaired the G8 meeting last year. The alliance is pushing African countries into agreements which allow foreign countries, this is what's important, allows foreign countries to grab African land, patent their seeds, monopolize their food products, ignoring the voices of their own people. Six African governments have struck deals with companies like Monsanto, Cargill, DuPont, Syngenta, Nestle's, and Unilever in return for promises of aid by the UK and other G8 nations. The first thing I discovered that is Bono has also praised the new alliance in a speech just before last year's G8 summit in the U.S. The second thing I discovered is that much of the One campaign's primary funding was provided by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, two of whose executives sit on its board. The foundation has been working with the biotech company Monsanto and the grain trading giant Cargill and has a large Monsanto shareholding. Bill Gates has responded to concerns raised by land grabbing in Africa by claiming, in the face of devastating evidence, massive resistance from African farmers that, quote, many of those land deals are beneficial and it would be too bad if some were held back because of Western groups' ways of looking at things, end quote. Well, Bill, it's not the Western groups. It's African groups. They're the ones who should be determining what is done with their own land. I forgot. Bill, as the richest man in the world, there is no one able to challenge you, is there? Even though you're wrong about everything? The third thing I discovered is that there's a long history here. In his brand and blistering book, The Front Man, Bono, in the Name of Power, just released in the UK, the Irish scholar Harry Brown maintained that, quote, for nearly three decades as a public figure, Bono has been amplifying elite discourses, advocating ineffective solutions, patronizing the poor, and kissing the asses of the rich and powerful, end quote. His approach to Africa is, quote, a slick mix of traditional missionary and commercial colonialism, in which the poor world exists as a task for the rich world to complete, end quote. Bono Brown charges has become, quote, the caring face of global technocracy, who, without any kind of mandate, has assumed the role of spokesperson for Africa, then used that role to provide, quote, humanitarian cover for Western leaders. His positioning of the West as the savior of Africa, while failing to discuss the harm the G8 nations are doing, has undermined campaigns for justice and accountability while lending legitimacy to a neoliberal project. Bono claims to be, quote, representing the poorest, most vulnerable people, but talking to a wide range of activists from both the poor and rich worlds since one published its article last week, I've heard the same complaint again and again, that Bono and others like him have seized the political space which might otherwise have been occupied by the Africans about whom they are talking. Because Bono is seen by world leaders as the representative of the poor are not invited to speak. This works very well for everyone except the poor. The One campaign looks to me like the sort of organization that John LeClaire or Robert Harris might have invented. It claims to work on behalf of the extremely poor, but its board is largely composed of multimillionaires, corporate aristocrats, and U.S. enforcers. Here you will find Condoleezza Rice, George Bush's national security advisor and secretary of state, who aggressively promoted the Iraq War, instructed the CIA that it was authorized to use torture techniques, and browbeat lesser nations into supporting a wide range of U.S. aims. Here, too, is Larry Summers, who was chief economist at the World Bank during the darkest days of structural adjustment, and who, as U.S. Treasury Secretary, helped to deregulate Wall Street with such happy consequences for the rest of us. Here's Howard Buffett, who has served on the boards of the global grain giant Archer Daniels Midland, as well as Coca-Cola and the food corporation ConAgra and Agrotech. Though the main focus of One is Africa, there are only two African members. One is a mobile phone baron, the other is a finance minister of Nigeria. You're kidding me. There isn't an honest politician in the history of Nigeria, who was formerly managing director of the World Bank. What better representatives of the extremely poor could there be? You think? If, as One does, an organization keeps telling you that it's a grassroots campaign, it's a fair bet that it's nothing of the kind. This collaboration of multimillionaires and technocrats looks to me more like a projection of U.S. and corporate power. I found the site of Bono last week calling for, quote, more progress on transparency, equally revolting. As Harry Brown reminds us, U2's complex of web of companies, the financial arrangements of Bono's Product Red campaign, and his investments through the private equity company he co-founded are also famously opaque. And it's not an overwhelming shock to discover that tax justice is absent from the global issues identified by One. There's a well-known, if dubious, story which claims that at a concert in Glasgow, Bono began a slow hand clap. He's supposed to have announced, "Every time I clap my hands, a child in Africa dies." Whereupon someone in the audience said, "Well, stop the SS doing that then." It's good advice, and I wished he'd take it. End of quote. Now, before we go to our guest, I'm very concerned, and have been, as I have been sharing with you for many years, that we who are independent thinking, conscientious individuals, who care about our country, also care about something called the Constitution, our Bill of Rights, and our freedoms, and that we should not have to have any government tell us that we can or cannot have a freedom of choice. And yet with Obama's absolutely fraudulent Obamacare, we won't have that choice, nor we will have good medicine, nor will more people be saved. Everywhere you look, we are being overgoverned. Any reasonable person is fully aware that we need a properly functioning government, but it should be a government that is completely transparent and is also being reviewed by citizens who can then show if there are injustices or excesses to correct those. Today we have a government that literally cares nothing of what the American public think because it's a law to itself. I am saddened and shocked that it's taken the left so long, the corporate left so long, to be called out by the authentic and legitimate left and liberal establishment, as it's taken that long for the corporate Republicans and the corporate right to be called out by the legitimate conservatives, many of whom have the same identical beliefs in respecting the rule of law and constitutional rights as anyone else in the political spectrum. So then one day we wake up and we find out what we have been saying all along, but now it's news. Wasn't news when it was broadcast originally on Progressive Radio Network over 9 years ago, nor on WBAI and other sister stations. But when Fox's reporter is found to be a target for uncovering some truths, then it's a story. And then when we start hearing from The Guardian and Glenn Greenwald and the whistleblower, Snowden, that our government is spying on all of us, then it becomes a major issue. Now watch how they're keeping away from this for a simple reason. The people in the media didn't know who all was connected to it. And many of the people connected to spying are the people that they have on the show as experts or people who are employed by those companies or people who are sponsors. Let's just put this in proper perspective. The monitoring of phone calls is absolute. Now, you can look back at what NBC reported but did not discover, that the government has sought to reassure us that it is only tracking metadata, such as the time and place of the calls, not the actual content of the calls. We proved yesterday that claim is patently absurd. They are lying. Here's what Washington's blog, here's what the facts are. I want this audience to know this. And mark my words, you will see everything I'm saying will be highly prophetic in the near future. The American government is in fact collecting and storing virtually every single phone call, every purchase, every email, every text message, every internet search, social media communications, health information, you bet, every single thing you've had in your blood workup, your medical exams, they have it. Your employment history, travel, student records, virtually all other information of every American, there is no exception. Whistleblowers revealed years ago that the National Security Agency was vacuuming up virtually all internet communications. The Washington Post and Guardian report that the National Security Agency is tapping directly into the central servers of the 9 leading U.S. internet companies, including Microsoft, Yahoo, Google, Facebook, Paltalk, AOL, Skype, and YouTube and Apple, and soon Dropbox, and extracting audio. That means they're listening. Video games, photographs, emails, documents, and connecting logs that enable analysis to track a person's movements. The Wall Street Journal reported that the National Security Agency spies on Americans' credit card transactions as well. In fact, all U.S. intelligence agencies, including the CIA and the National Security Agency, are going to spy on Americans' finances. Every transaction you've had, they're going to have. The IRS will be spying on America's shopping records, travel and social interactions, health records, and files from other government investigators. Now, according to Glenn Greenwald, quote, a seemingly spontaneous admission this week by a former FBI counterterrorism agent provides a rather startling acknowledgement of just how vast and invasive these surveillance activities are. When Aaron Burnett, and I reported this yesterday, interviewed Tim Clemente, a former FBI counterterrorism agent, about whether the FBI would be able to discover the contents of past telephone conversations, meaning the contents, what you actually said between two people, he said, quote, yes, they can. And that was it. Quote, we certainly have ways in national security investigations to find out exactly what you said in that conversation. And then Burnett says, so they can actually get that? People are saying, look, that's incredible. Clemente, no, welcome to America. All that stuff is being captured as we speak, whether we know it, like it, or not. all that stuff, meaning every telephone conversation Americans have with one another on U.S. soil, with or without a search warrant, is being captured as we speak. Now, Clemente again appeared on CNN, this time with host Carol Costello, and she asked him about these remarks. He reiterated what he had said the night before, but added expressly, quote, all digital communication in the past are recorded and stored as well. Let me repeat that for this audience. Quote, no digital communication is secure, by which he means not that any communication is susceptible to government interception as it happens, but far beyond that, all digital communication, meaning telephone calls, emails, online chats, and the like, are automatically recorded and stored and accessible to the government after the fact. So, there have been some previous indications this is true. Former AT&T engineer Mark Klein revealed that AT&T and other telecoms had built a special network that allowed the National Security Agency full and unfettered access to data about the telephone calls and the content of email communications for all their customers. Specifically, Klein said, quote, that the National Security Agency set up a system that vacuumed up internet and phone call data from ordinary Americans with cooperation of AT&T. And that contrary to the government's depiction of this surveillance program as aimed at overseas terrorists, much of the data sent through AT&T to the NAA was purely domestic, end quote. That every single telephone call is recorded and stored was also explained in another story in the Washington Post. Every day, collection systems at the National Security Agency, quote, intercept and store 1.7 billion emails, phone calls, and other types of communication, from the Washington Post. Now, from the Atlantic, the TSA surveillance of our communications is much more than meta-analysis. Technology has made it possible for the American government to spy on citizens to an extent East Germany could only dream of. Basically, everything we say that can be traced digitally is being collected by the National Security Agency. As the top spy chief at the U.S. National Security Agency, William Biney, explained, the National Security Agency is collecting 100 billion 1,000 character emails every day and 20 trillion communications of all types every year. Biney says the government has collected all of the communications of congressional leaders, generals, and everyone else in the United States for the last 10 years. Biney further explains that he personally set up the National Security Agency system so that all the information would automatically be encrypted so that the government had to obtain a search warrant based upon probable cause before particular suspects' communication could be decrypted. But the National Security Agency now collects all data in an encrypted form as so that no probable cause is needed to view any citizen's information. Biney says that if anyone gets on the government's enemies list, then the stored information will be used to target them. Specifically, he notes that if the government decides it doesn't like someone, it analyzes all the data it has collected on that person and his or her associates over the last 10 years to build a case against them. This includes whistleblowers, activists, and even government insiders. Biney's statements are confirmed by other National Security Agency whistleblowers. For example, quote, while at the National Security Agency, Kirk Weib, along with Ed Lomas and Bill Biney, created a computer program that could isolate large amounts of information collected by the National Security Agency while protecting America's privacy. But the National Security Agency ignored their program. Quote, we had a solution to this entire problem that would have avoided this whole mess, said Weib. Instead, the National Security Agency chose Trailblazer, a multi-billion dollar computer program that was supposed to revolutionize how the agency analyzed communication data. Weib and Lomas and Biney and another NSA employee, Thomas Drake, called for an investigation into Trailblazer, citing massive fraud and waste. But they did nothing. And it goes on, however. For example, right now, we know that there are drones over the United States, the domestic use of drones to spy on Americans. That clearly violates the Fourth Amendment and limits our rights to personal privacy. But there's more. I have a map showing all the areas designated by the Department of Defense, which is almost every state, for monitoring. Many police departments can also use drones to spy on us. At least 13 state and local agencies around the country have used drones in the field or in training. That's according to the Association for Unmanned Vehicle Systems International. The Federal Aviation Administration has predicted that in another few years, 30,000 commercial drones will be flying across the United States. Well, then what can we do about it? These drones are so good that they can recognize your height, your age, your gender, and your skin color with the cameras they have on board. But it gets worse. Let me tell you what no one's told you. All right, now we go to the deep and dark part of this. Transit authorities in cities across the country are quietly installing microphone-enabled surveillance systems on public buses that will give them the ability to record every conversation you have on a bus. The systems are being installed in San Francisco, Baltimore, and other cities with funding from the Department of Homeland Security. The IP audio systems can be accessed remotely via a built-in web server and can be combined with GPS data to track the movements of the buses and the passengers through the city. The system uses cables or Wi-Fi to pair audio conversations with camera images in order to produce synchronous recordings. And audio and video can be monitored in real time. And it'll be stored in black box-like devices for retrieval. And there's 4 to 6 cameras stored in a given bus. Privacy and security expert Soltani told the Daily Beast that the audio could easily be coupled with facial recognition systems to identify a passenger. Then streetlights that can spy installed in some American cities. Now, Americans welcome a brand new smart street lighting system. You know, the energy efficient, long-lasting, complete with LED screens that show ads. Those are also able to spy on citizens. With a price tag of $3,000 a piece, the streetlights are now being rolled out in Detroit, Chicago, and Pittsburgh, but they'll be all across America in every city. Part of the Intel Street Systems, made by the company Illuminating Concepts, have a number of, quote, Homeland Security applications. Each has a microprocessor, quote, essentially similar to the iPhone, capable of wireless communications. They can capture your image, your voice, digital record you, everything about you, and feed it into a police department. Cell towers are now tracking your phone at any given moment, and the major cell carriers, including Verizon and AT&T, responded to at least 1.3 million law enforcement requests for cell phone locations and other data just last year. Also, the TSA has moved way past airports, trains, and stadiums, is deploying mobile scanners to spy on people all over the place. That means that wherever you're at, up and down your street, a TSA vehicle, unmarked, can look into your home and see what you're doing and what you're saying. They now, the Department of Homeland Security is going to continue to allow searches of laptops and phones used upon hunches. The ACLU published a map showing that nearly two-thirds of American public, that's 197 million people, live within a constitution-free zone. Have you not heard of a constitution-free zone? Well, that's where the Fourth Amendment doesn't apply. That's where they can stop on a hunch and search anything about you from your laptop, your phone. They can take your phone. They can download everything off your phone. Didn't know about it? Get used to it. The bottom line is that the extraordinary authorities that the government possesses at the borders are spilling into regular America. And remember, border agents don't need probable cause, and they don't need a search warrant. They don't need anything, just suspicion. Now that's true all across the United States, many states. In fact, listen to this. If you live anywhere, anywhere in Connecticut, Delaware, Florida, Hawaii, Maine, Massachusetts, Michigan, New Hampshire, New Jersey, and Rhode Island, the Department of Homeland Security says the search zones encompass the entire state, so anyone can be searched for anything at any time they choose based upon a hunch. That brings you up to date on just some of the latest things that they are doing. Let's go to my guest who is standing by, Dr. Tony Barr. Nice to have you with us today, Tony.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Tony Bark, B-A-R-K, is a pediatric physician and a homeopathic physician in Chicago. And Tony's here for a newsmaker segment, which is a short segment dealing with a specific issue. And the issue is that right now we're seeing Paul Offit and others attack the idea that people should be taking supplements, but then again, they're attacking almost everything in the natural health field. These are heavy proponents of vaccines or medications. Tony, tell us about your concerns about what Dr. Paul Offit is doing and what it means, since he's getting a lot of mainstream media coverage, including in USA Today.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's very interesting. I mean, he's been an insider for a long time, an industry insider, and is typically billed as, you know, an independent academic, which couldn't be farther from the truth. I mean, independent academics don't make 30 million plus. He's got a chair that's paid for, I believe, by Merck, and he holds patents on vaccines, and, you know, he's got a lot of conflicts of interest. He's also got books he's trying to sell, and his latest book is Do You Believe in Magic? Which, you know, interestingly, I was thinking of writing a book with the same title, talking about all the deaths and poor outcomes from pharmaceuticals. So, you know, it's very interesting that he's turned it on its head. You know, he's a big proponent of the pharmaceutical industry only, meaning he is against any kind of alternative treatment, any kind of use of supplements, vitamins, minerals. He doesn't believe they should be in the hands of people. And he's doing this at the very same time that we know there's been a huge push by the industry, by the pharmaceutical industry, to take the rights away from the public, not only in the United States, but Canada and Europe as well. And at the same time, while they're ghostwriters are writing articles on how dangerous vitamins, minerals, and supplements and antioxidants are, they're actually buying up these small companies that are producing the very same things they're trying to badmouth, because they want a piece of the pie, and they know it's a huge piece of the pie. It's as big as pharmaceutical sales, and that's really what this is about. I mean, if Paul Offit was very concerned about people dying from taking products, he needs to look no further than the pharmaceutical industry, because you're about 64,000 times more likely to have an adverse event from an over-the-counter or prescription medication. And, you know, in terms of fatalities, you know, in the last few years there's been zero fatalities from supplements, and there's been thousands to the hundreds of thousands of fatalities per year. You know, many are not even reported. So we know what's reported just from anti-inflammatories, just from the NSAIDs, the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. We have about 110,000, 120,000 a year in the United States reported. But then there's those that even aren't reported. You know, people who die, succumb to infections who, you know, didn't mount an immune response. I'm not including those. I'm including only the deaths where it's been recognized it was an immediate link between taking the drug and then the overdose or an adverse event from the drug, like such as a bleed out in the case of an anti-inflammatory. So we've got thousands, hundreds of thousands of deaths and adverse events from vaccines and prescription and over-the-counter drugs, and we're talking about, oh, maybe 6,000 reported adverse events, zero fatalities from supplements. And he quotes Cochrane. Cochrane's a very respected organization, worldwide collaboration. What they do is large-scale meta-analyses, and those of you who don't know what that is where a pooling of numerous studies that have been done. They try to throw out studies that look like they were very, you know, poorly run, and then they do some statistical analysis on the studies they have. But you can only get garbage from garbage. And why I'm saying that is that most studies looking at supplements, vitamins, and minerals, the majority at the academic centers are funded by the industry with a bias in mind. And so while Cochrane doesn't have the bias, they can only do stats on what there is. And anybody in biochemistry and studies specifically antioxidants, which Paul Offit really targeted, understands that most antioxidants in one dose work as an antioxidant, and other doses can work as a pro-oxidant. And when you're designing supplements, which I'm actually designing supplements for people right now and working as a consultant, you have to understand that. And so, you know, people who make supplements really don't, you know, wouldn't recommend a tocotrienol in 200 milligram tablets. You know, we all understand that in low dose it's quite protective, it's an antioxidant, and in a large dose it could be a pro-oxidant. Resveratrol. Resveratrol has a very issue. In a low to moderate dose, it's an unbelievable, it lengthens telomeres, it prevents cell death, and in high dose, it's being looked at for cancer treatments because in very high doses, it does just the opposite. It shortens telomeres, and it increases cell death for those cells that are dividing quickly, which are cancer cells. So, you know, and another example would be looking at homocysteine levels and using SAMe for homocysteine. Well, if you B12 and folate are deficient, you're going to drive the homocysteine higher. But if you have adequate B12 and folate while you take the SAMe, it's going to improve and reduce the homocysteine. So, you know, there's a lot of ways of getting the outcomes you want if you want to badmouth supplements just by understanding the biochemical pathways and using that to your advantage. And so my concern is that Offit is really bad-mouthing. He's part of the industry, this whole campaign to smear supplementation, and it's really to take the supplements out of the hands of the public so the drug companies can have full control, patent them, charge more, or even if they can't patent them because they're naturally occurring, have control over them, charge more, and then, of course, you'd have to go to your doctor, yet again, another person who typically has no clue how to use these things, and it would be out of the hands. It's again, another form of this medical fascism, and the industry, just like Monsanto and Cargill and all those companies you just spoke about coming into Africa and taking hold of what people are growing, the pharmaceutical industry wants to have complete control over what you're putting in your body that's not considered a food.
Great. Thank you very much, Tony, for coming on and sharing your rebuttal to Paul Offit. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Dr. Tony Bark. And her website, and she's got a lot of good material up there. She's always cutting edge, always sharing things, is disease-reversal.com. I'm Gary Noll. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more on our next program. Now, let's say hello to Luann Panessi's in on the phone. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, I got an email just the other day. It was actually during the show that you were doing. And it's from a woman from San Francisco. Her name is Beverly. And she says, my sister who lives in New Jersey bought your Joy of Juicing cookbook on Amazon and sent me a copy. And she says, I'm not really into health, but I'm about 50 pounds overweight. My blood sugar is high, around 180 in the morning, and I'm noticing discoloration in my toes, and I have a neuropathy for about 3 months. She says, but I used the book. I started following the recipes, and I've now lost 43 pounds. My blood sugar is now around 81. My discoloration in my toes is gone. And I used to also have a lot of mucus, and that is gone. She said, I'm following the regimen, and it has made a tremendous difference. This isn't so much about thanking you, but apologizing to my sister, because for about 15 years, we would argue about any suggestions about health that she gave me. I'm involved in the mainstream medical field, and I kind of thought everybody outside of my paradigm was stupid or quacks. And yet, my sister is the healthy one in the family. I was certain about my beliefs. Now my sister is sending me your book, Living in the Moment and Overcoming the Dark Side. She said it would help me to better understand my resistance to alternative information on health and my cult-like devotion to orthodox medical philosophies. Believe it or not, I've told people in my work environment who asked me, how did you lose all that weight? I told them that I'm on the SlimFast diet because I know the ridicule and disdain and mockery that would come if I told them that I was on a juicing detox program. I feel I'm at the first step of this new journey of enlightenment, yet I'm scared to death because I know I won't get any support from my current environment. And I can certainly relate to her because when I first came back from your retreat in Texas, I was having my green juices in a stainless steel coffee mug, so they thought I was still drinking my 13 cups of coffee a day, and I was drinking green juice all day. So I understand how she feels.
Mm. Well, it's unfortunate that she has to feel she has to hide her positive changes because other people would be threatened by them. Reminds me of an old saying, nothing sways the stupid more than arguments they can't understand. We're out of time, Luann. Thank you.